So we'll do a guided practice on the theme. But I want to actually open it up with one window into the way the mind works with integrating insights. So I was doing my mindful walk, and the headline for one of the insights that I had on this last retreat arose. The wisdom headline for it is mind and body, same. And then the thinking mind jumped in and went, what was it exactly I was tracking in direct experience that allowed that insight to penetrate so deeply? And I started down that rabbit hole of trying to remember what exactly it was that led to that insight. And I couldn't remember. And I noticed I was doing that. And I noticed it as a near miss, a not quite with direct experience. I could notice the way trying to figure all that out was actually pushing the insight taste further and further away. And I went, perfect. This is how this works. So it's nice to have a guided meditation to actually work with the process of the mind that's waking up and to work with that process in awareness. Because most of the time in processes like that, we are alone. So here we are together. So I'm thinking we'll just take the first part of the meditation just in the quiet and in our own way, trusting that we know whether it's most skillful to keep it simple, reconnect with the thread of breathing. Whether the mind is steady enough and focused enough to open to more experience of humanity coming and going, the sounds, the thoughts, the emotions, sensations. And we're always fine-tuning and listening to what's needed. If we're here, if there's some sense of rest or present, it probably doesn't need a lot of fiddling at this point. And if those qualities aren't there, then bring in some tools, some breathing with labels or counting or feeling the hands or whatever helps you reestablish the sense of here. And then later in the meditation, we'll play around with this mind that engages insights. And so now we'll transition into the guided portion of the meditation. And this is for the purpose of training. And so for some of us, it might feel a little bit mechanical or contrived, because we're going to be calling up an insight. Some minds, when it's suggested that to them to do anything specific like that, they just shut down. It's the nature of those minds. No biggie. But we're going to practice in this way so that when we're actually developing a deeper relationship with the aftermath of the insights that move through us, that we have some tools This is a relationship. It needs to be developed. We're not in control of the process, but it's not a passive process at all. So different people experience insight in different ways. So what I'm about to do is to invite us to see if we can try and call up some moment from the past, which will be present here, of, you know, an aha moment or some sort of insight, whether it's mental, body, energetic, heart. It doesn't actually matter what kind it is. Insights carry similar characteristics in direct experience, a range of characteristics. But for some people to actually elicit an insight that's already happened, you're going to want to call up an image of where you were when it happened. Your visual type of mind. Some of us are more somatic minded, kind of the feeling of the body remembering back to that experience or that moment. For some people, there'll be some words. Oh yeah, that insight I had about, you know, the way that suffering works and the way that compassion works. So just make sure to give it a headline, not a thesis. And for some people, I'm suggesting you call up an insight and your mind's completely blank, and then it goes into, oh, I never have an insight, I can't remember my insights, I've lost my insights. Just relax. I think this process will work even if you don't have anything particular, honestly. So we can all just relax. You know, we're not actually doing anything here. We're just hanging out on the cushion or on the chair. The air conditioning just turned off. It's cool. Oh, people are breathing. We've got a shawl or some material that you sense against your skin. Just sense that for a minute. Very ordinary. Just happening right here. And then we work it with this in a less is more manner, the term titration. Less is more. So, if we can, knowing we're not in charge of this show, we'll call up some insight that we've had. It can be long in the past. But basically, we're just calling up some moment in our spiritual journey that touched us. No. If you think, I don't know about insights, just call up something that touched you. And we're just going to, you know, relax the face a little bit and let the jaw go. And, you know, let the hands rest wherever they're resting. So you notice we're not getting super involved in this insight. We're resting the hands. And just the sense of that space and time, the place, or how you felt in your body, or the kind of headline. And just see if once or twice for a moment, or maybe for a few moments for some of us, you can just rest in what that actually feels like, because guess what? It's right here. And then inevitably, we can also notice the quiet or loud twitterings of the mind. Things like we start to tell the story of the insight and create a future out of it. Or we try to remember the exact set of circumstances that led to that insight. We find the mind going, I want to live my whole life like this. Or some confusion or doubt. We can just notice these things. It's like, oh yeah, there's the swirling around the still point in the center where everything's taking care of itself. You never produce this insight. All we have to do is get out of the way. So maybe we set our intention. Oh yes, may this insight deepen through me. Or may I live this understanding as fully as possible. And really rest with the inspiration of that intention. Maybe you give it your own wisdom headline in an acknowledgement and honoring. Oh, body, mind, same. And just rest after you drop in that wisdom statement. There's nothing else to do. You just rest and let the ripples move out. You couldn't come up with an insight, or it's starting to get complicated. Just drop in the simple resolve. May I rest with the deepest part that is known. And then do nothing else. Let it take care of itself. The reason that we miss the direct experience of insight, as well as the echo effect of remembering back to the direct experience of an insight, the reason we miss it is very similar to the reason that we miss deeper access to awareness. It's too simple. It's too subtle. And it's not about us. Thinking mind doesn't like that at all. But in the midst of whatever you're kind of chewing on or resting in or confused about in this moment, as we're playing around with something that's quite nuanced, Can you just sense in the middle of that swirl that there's something? You can't maybe put a label on it. You don't know what it is, but there's just like, oh yeah, but there is something. And maybe you feel the caring about that something. That wisdom kernel that got born through us, through that insight. It's resting. And sensing something that's hard to say anything about other than knowing that it's there. And so some of us rest there. Some of us will notice the struggle reemerge. Just calling back up the insight dropped us down into the deeper root system of conditioning. And the mind or the body gets cranky for no reason or restless or some emotional upset appears. And it's like, okay, so much caring. So much breath. This is actually part of the experience of insight. We get to see more and feel more and be in relationship with more. And so sometimes we'll swim there and then at a certain point we'll feel done and we'll go back to the breath and perfectly ordinary, breathing in and breathing out. Knowing what we know without making a story out of it. So you can work with a practice like that as you remember the way it was offered, which, you know, will be imperfect memory. You can just take one part that spoke to you, like, oh yeah, it would be helpful when my deeper spiritual yearnings come up to bring in the power of intention more often, so I don't just get lost in like trying to create a world where it's happened, I'm actually directing the mind. Or maybe it was the wisdom headline. Yeah. To just keep refreshing that over and over as you're moving through the world. Or keeping on the lookout for a thought like, I want to live my whole life like this, or whatever thought you have when this process moves through you, you know. So you can take it in a piece, you can take it as a whole. You can forget it ever happened and live the rest of your life and prosper. Okay. So now we'll have two different choices for practice for the next 15 minutes. One is the option for some mindful movement Qigong practice in here. The other is option for walking meditation. If you do walking meditation, come back at 4:15 because I'm not going to ring the bell because I'm leaving Qigong. Qigong is an ancient energy and movement practice out of China. Also practiced in other countries. And we're just doing very short, very simple. So it's to support the energetic balance of the mind and the body, to support the body for keeping awake the rest of the day and you know, any stiff spots, etc. But it's definitely less is more. We only move in our own range of motion. We never move into pain in a practice like this for today. It's usually done standing up. If 15 minutes is too long for you to stand up, I have absolutely benefited from Qigong sitting down when standing up for a long time was hard for me. So that's the intro on that. And we'll all come to standing, and then some of us will stay, and some of us will walk. And I'm just going to try to speak up because it's really hard to move and not get myself tangled. First, we have Wu Qi in the Chinese, and that's standing meditation posture. This is a great one if you don't know what to do when you get tired when you're meditating, and the teacher suggests you stand up. So you just stand there and wait to wake up to do the real meditation sitting down. So this is the real meditation standing up. So the feet are hip-width apart and they're parallel. We're inviting the attention of the mind to drop into the feet and feel the contact with the floor. The knees are soft, they're not locked. The hips are open, and there's a plumb line that runs from the bottom of the tailbone down into the earth so that the low back is long. The gaze is soft, the eyes are open, and the tongue rests on the roof of the mouth. And if you look at me, you'll notice that the hands are not facing the sides, they're facing the wall behind us. The Qigong teacher I trained with for a long time always said it's like you carry a golf ball in your armpit, but don't hold it too tight. A little space. And then the breath, deep, full abdominal breathing. Let everyone around you hear you breathe. I know you've been trying to be quiet all day to not annoy your neighbors. Let it go. I was thinking of a little meridian practice. I don't often do this with you guys, but just like bring in a little bit more energy and balance things out a little bit. It's just a tapping practice, mindful tapping practice. So we're starting with our left hand on the back of our right hand, and we're tapping. Let's tap up the inside of the arm.
And then we tap across the upper chest a little bit. And we're tapping back. And then we're going up to the back of the arm. And on the other side, start at the inside. So you need more joy in your meditation practice, do this before you sit. Back of your arm. And then, let's see, how about the low back? We'll just pound on the low back, just not too hard. Pound sounds terrible. But we're kind of using the fists. And maybe the hips need a little bit, they're tight, I don't know. Just see what you need back there. And then we're going to go down the outside of both legs. And up the inside of both legs. Again. And then down the other leg. Up the front. Down. The low back, maybe a little, not with your fists, but with the palms, a little bit on the kidneys, or a rub, maybe. Oh. And we can bring the hands together, generate a little heat. And maybe we need this area of the heart, maybe it's the area of the throat, maybe it's a face rub, I don't know, you'll know. So just see where your hands want to go to bring some heat and thrust. Self-massage, yeah. There's the jaw or the eyes. And then maybe just kind of a last clearing practice of the head. I trained in Qigong with my friend and somebody I teach with, Tisha Bell. He comes up here. And he says, if you got too many thoughts in your head, just go like this. It's a clearing practice for thoughts in your head. So you just walk out of here with anything you don't want, okay? So we just go. Two more. And then just shake anything else out. You shake out, right? I mean, that's not magic, right? It works on intention and awareness. No promises here, okay? All right, radiant body breath. Again, you have trouble with your shoulders, don't go up all the way, okay? So we're inhaling up, palms up at shoulder height. And we're exhaling and showering ourselves with loving kindness. Why not? Breathing in. And breathing out. And once more. And rest. And then we're going to put the hands in front of the energetic power center, sometimes called the Dantian. So it's two finger widths below the belly button and inside. So we're just placing the hands in front there. And we're inhaling up from the earth, up the center channel. And exhaling and radiating out that same loving kindness for everybody here. Inhaling and exhaling. And you can just notice how far that metta wants to spread. And last one. We have clearing practice, three centers breathing. So placing the hands again in front here, this power center, and we're breathing in and opening the arms and breathing out and closing them. Breathing in, opening the arms and rocking forward a little on the feet. And we're exhaling and settling towards the heels. So we're bringing the attention to the space of the abdomen in the Dantian area with the intention to clear anything we don't need. And there's a kind of pulse that happens here when you rock back and forth, so you're not just flapping your arms around. Okay, up to the heart center, inhaling and opening, exhaling and closing, and we're feeling the space of the heart, the back body behind the heart, clearing anything that's not needed. Okay, heart to head center. Inhaling and opening, exhaling and closing, and we're feeling the space within the head and around the head, clearing the head. And that gentle rocking forward and back, expanding and contracting. And now we're going to exhale and float the hands down in front like they're floating through water. And rest. Oh, time always goes in time. All right. Last one, playful one. Dragon's Pearl. Left hand in front of the Dantian, palm up. Right hand in front of the heart, palm down. So what we've got here is a dragon's pearl. So this is the pearl, chi, of available energy, and we're the dragon. So we're going to move this pearl to the right, flip the hands over, and move it to the left. And we're maintaining connection with this energetic space, this chi ball, and the connection with the earth through the feet. And one of the open questions I ask myself when I do this practice is, if I wasn't trying to do it right, what would it feel like right now? What would it look like if I wasn't trying to get the form right? And let the pearl lead. You know what I always say, it's not cheating to smile during this practice. Sometimes I think I need to bring in about 10 8-year-olds to show us how to really do this practice as play and presence. And then we're floating the hands to the front, and they're floating down through that imaginary water. Just sinking into the earth, sensing the palms of the hands, the soles of the feet. Placing the hands back on the dantian. And breathing into this spot of available energy. It's like a battery. Energetically speaking, it doesn't run out. It's available, as I know only too well, in sickness and in health. It's available to access after a long day or in the most beautiful moments of our lives. So we're breathing in and out through this power center. So thank you for your mindfulness in motion. And if there is some simple movement that your body wants to do that's not Qigong, feel free, and I will start the next teaching in about a couple minutes. Oh, good. I have this tendency to lose everything right after retreat, so I try to keep track of my physical objects. It's such an exercise in futility. Oh, thank you. So, old favorite poem here. Kind of a different style of response to that concern that I had, that I've discovered talking with other practitioners over the years, that is a
shared anxiety at certain points in our spiritual journey. This whole thing about, well, am I going to lose it? Is it going to disappear? Am I going to forget? And my teacher's saying, you will forget all this and you will remember. So here's another way that this kind of works, this forgetting and this remembering. And some of you know this, Autobiography in Five Short Chapters by Portia Nelson. So it's an autobiography, right? Chapter one. I walk down the street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I fall in. I'm lost. I'm helpless. It isn't my fault. And it takes me forever to get out. Chapter two. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I pretend I don't see it. That'll work. I still fall in. I can't believe I'm in the same place. But it is not my fault. It still takes me an awful long time to get out. Chapter three. I walk down the same street, and lo and behold, the same deep hole in the sidewalk. I see it is there. I still fall in. It's a habit. My eyes are open. I know where I am. It is my fault, and I get out immediately. Chapter four. I walk down the same street. There's a deep hole in the sidewalk. I walk around it. Chapter five, I walk down a different damn street. She didn't say damn, but anyway. I actually hadn't been carrying this poem around for a couple of years, and I'm always quoting this poem. And I realized, I need to pull it out again to make sure that I'm staying true to Portia's voice. And sure enough, there were a couple lines I had forgotten. So brought it back in, kind of what wisdom just keeps growing, mind to mind, sharing to sharing. And then we want to respect the roots and the source. So one other thing about losing it that's really interesting. Sometimes we feel like we've lost an insight or some kind of deep experience in our lives. And what's actually happened is it's become so familiar to us living in the new way, and it's actually become so deeply integrated into our being that it's ordinary. And we're longing for the specialness of the experience that led to the very thing that we have today. So that one's always fascinating. Because we're literally longing for what's in our lap. But because it's not expressing itself the same way, and some part of our mind said, well, it has to feel special, it has to feel intense, it has to feel profound, it has to feel however your idea is of how it has to feel, and now it doesn't feel that way, so it must be gone. And it's like, no, it's in its own process. And so now it's ordinary. And so that's why it circles. Because now it's so ordinary that we think that we may have lost it, and now it moves over here, and we start again, and we start again, and we start again. It's amazing. I love how minds work. Obviously I'm a meditation teacher. I love how minds work. I think it's the most fascinating thing in the world. You're a scientist, then it's your science, the most fascinating thing in the world. Here's the thing, when that process completes, then we can really live it. Then in our relationships and our work and our activism and the way we're moving around in the world, it's so natural to be moving from that place of wisdom or heartfulness or embodiment that's more, just to use a word, more than before. It's the most natural thing in the world. Nobody looks at us and goes, wow. Just normal, would be normal. So that's it on the reflections. And resource-wise, especially if you're in a period where, whether it's you sat a retreat, you went to a different country, you gave birth, you were present at death. I'm naming some of these things because these are places in life where sometimes ahas happen. You know? Ahas can happen at any time. I had a really good friend. Her like most profound insight, probably her entire meditation career, happened while she was cleaning the heating duct. Okay, so everywhere's available, but some things are more likely. You know, you're going through one of these periods where you're digesting something. You know something shifted in you, but you're still acting in the same ways, but you know something shifted. You might want to pick up this book, After the Ecstasy of the Laundry, by Jack Kornfield, because it's just so normalizing and just gives us a range of what we might expect and what's possible, et cetera. Obviously, if you're working with a teacher or therapist, when you're in a cycle like that, work with your teacher or your therapist, right? Or your mentor or your sponsor or whomever. Because this, it's actually really important to have that interpersonal support at various different times in our psychological, spiritual journey. You know? It wasn't set up for every single human creature to be in a cave for 20 years with no contact. If it was set up that way, then that's, you know, what it would be happening now and before and always. That was always just the smallest few. But we tend to idealize that and then think that we should be that. And it's not always supportive to us. Retreats are great. Of all kinds. The other thing is a different version of the talk that I gave earlier this afternoon is on dharmaseed.org. Gave it quite some time ago now. I gave it at the end of the March month-long retreat in 2015. So you're going to have to scroll back through those talks. But it's called Integrating Insights and Other Aha Moments in Practice. And so if you want to revisit some of these concepts, I shared about it a little differently here because we're at a day-long. I was giving that talk in the context of a group of people who had sat in silence for either a month or 2 months of retreat. So, but it'll still be a good refresher, I hope. So, think of other resources, and then I'll find out a couple of other themes you might be interested in, find out from you. Mountain Stream is up there, Mountain Stream Meditation Center. So if you're ever passing through or know somebody who is Buddhist or not Buddhist, everyone's welcome. The labyrinth in the backyard is awesome for everybody of all ages. There's benches. There's a huge Buddha statue from Thailand. People just hang out in mindfulness and walk and sit and read literature from our library. And yeah.
Could you say the name again? Is it Mountain.
Mountain Stream.
In Nevada City.
In Nevada City, yeah. So that's there, and because in several of my conversations today with some of you, there was this question coming up about teachers and finding teachers. This comes up almost every time I come to SIM, and I think it's because as a community, you guys are committed. I mean, I travel around to a lot of communities, and everybody's sincere, but community-wide, you guys are committed. So it makes sense that that question would come up. And so, you know, what I would say is a few guidelines if you're not, like, right at the beginning of your retreat life or your meditation life for people who are further on. There's a million teachers out there. They're all great. Find a couple that you really resonate with and follow them around, okay? It doesn't need to be one, especially if you're nervous about weird interpersonal stuff. It can be a couple, okay? But choose a couple because otherwise, you know, you can always go online for as many different teaching voices as you could ever want. But as far as getting support for your own practice, you want to choose one or two teachers that, like, if you sit a residential retreat every year, you're always sitting it with that teacher or those teachers. Why? Because then we can get to know you, your story, the issues you have in your meditation, what's growing, what's stagnate, and really support you over time. If you choose retreats that fit your schedule and it's a different teacher every single time, you will get a lot out of those retreats, but you won't get the teacher support that you can get when you start to develop a relationship. I mean, this is just reality. We've got this smorgasbord. It's awesome. But at a certain point, people are looking for something more. And what I see is they don't know how to find it. You know? So I've been doing a little education with people the last few years, how to do this. Most of us senior teachers work with people individually. Most of us have full practices. But it's worth dropping a line to a teacher that you're interested in working with individually. Like, I have a wait list, and people get in off that wait list. And I work it intuitively. There's no number system. You know, I'll just like something to open up, and I'll have a conversation with somebody, and it just happened to all come together. And I'm like, yeah, I think we're supposed to be talking right now. That's it, you know? It's intuitive. So that's available. And certainly, you know, we're lucky to have Sim and Sacramento Dharma Center, because you can come every week. That continuity really matters, and it's the same team of teachers. They can start to get to know you. Yeah. So just different levels. For me, the two retreats I recommend, if you are interested in connecting with me more over time with your practice, is the June Mountain Stream Retreat. I do it every year in June. It has a prerequisite. It's not your first meditation retreat. It's on the lineage that I carry and teach from my teacher in Thailand. And then the other one is up at Cloud Mountain in July, and it's a retreat on awakening in the body. So it's first foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the nervous system, energetic practices, silent retreat. And Cloud Mountain's awesome. You just fly into Portland. It's very reasonably priced. So I do that every July. Those are the two I'd recommend the most to a community like this. I teach like 15 retreats a year, but I doubt you want to fly to North Carolina or, you know, New York or whatever. Why, when there's so many great retreats here? So I am interested, what am I interested in? Often I ask you guys for questions. This time I'm going to ask you questions. I am interested in what happened for you during either that last guided meditation or anything that came up in the morning meditation. I'm interested in anybody that has a headline or kind of a question about some insight that you're working with in your life, and you'd just like to kind of tease it out a little bit more in a minute or two. And of course, I'm interested in whatever else you're interested in. But yeah.
I would like to share with you an awareness that I have about some insights.
Yeah.
They're kind of like optical illusions.
Optical illusions, yeah.
I keep looking at it and looking at it, and all I see is the two faces.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly the vase is there.
Hmm.
And I can never look at it again without seeing both.
Oh, yeah.
And it has been a really useful training tool for me as
good.
A way of remembering what I have been given now, what I know now, that I didn't know before.
That's great. That's like your wisdom headline, but it's an image.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I sense there's also like a somatic resonance with it, too. You know? That's wonderful. And I mean, these are the things that we can just keep touching back in with so that it's balancing and informing the endless habituation and conditioning.
And the other piece for me is, so I come out of the Catholic tradition.
Mm.
And one of the Catholic teachers who has really resonated with me is Henry Nouwen.
Mm-hmm.
One of the teachings was about when we feel like we have fallen off the path.
Mm.
We don't roll all the way down to the bottom. We just fall off sideways. And I love that because it's so tempting when we're in that place of, I've forgotten everything I ever learned. How many times do I have to learn this damn lesson? To think that we have rolled all the way back down to the bottom.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's really helpful for me to remember, no, I've just fallen off the side, and I can climb back up there.
Yeah.
And reclaim
yeah.
The merit of the effort that has taken me to this spot on the path.
Mm-hmm.
I find that very helpful.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to restate through the mic what the image was, you know, when we're afraid we've lost it or we've forgotten, and instead of thinking that we've fallen off the path and rolled all the way down the hill, we've just fallen off the side, you know, and we can pull ourselves back up. And that's great. You know, there are hundreds and hundreds of images and metaphors and wisdom statements, and really the art of meditation with this is finding our own, what speaks to us, and then just letting it resonate through us and inform us. That's great. No. Yeah.
Seems like ever since I was aware of myself, of a wider world, I just glommed on to the idea that being a person of wisdom would be really, really swell.
Being a person of wisdom would be really, really swell, yes.
And so it was, some things just really sing to you a little bit more. So that was the case, I guess.
Yeah.
And then because you would led us to think that maybe questions would, we'd be asking questions, I wanted to ask you if you could help me just a little bit with the relationship between insight and wisdom, because it seems like that they have a relationship.
Yeah.
And then from a Buddhist perspective, because I didn't have a Buddhist perspective as a child, but from a Buddhist perspective, you know, what exactly is wisdom considered? And maybe we don't have to say from a Buddhist perspective. Wider than that.
Yeah. That's like that question in the book, what's a month? You know?
Yeah.
You do a whole discourse on this.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So wouldn't it be swell to be a person, and I also want to tie them together. Wouldn't it be swell to be a person of wisdom? And what is the relationship between insight and wisdom? I mean, yeah, they're completely family members. You know? I mean, if I was just going to speak metaphorically and simply, which kind of the conditions demand, it's like, insight is the direct experience, and wisdom is, you know, what the result. I'm not saying there isn't wisdom in the direct experience, but it's like that's what manifests, right? We start to this whole thing about wise view increasing, right? So there's a direct experience of deepening heartfulness, or you know, again, wisdom, like we'll often look at these three characteristics, which I want to name again for people who are newer, right? Impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and not self, right? Everything changes. When I hold on, it hurts. It's not personal. It's a lay way of putting it. So, you know, again, those are reflections of wisdom. But I'm going to keep it just very, very simple, because it really actually needs a whole nother Dharma talk. And I still just want to bring it back to, oh, there's this part that's longing. There's this part that's living it already. And like where, you know, it's like finding your groove, your balance, your resting within those dynamics. As far as practice goes, I think is way more important, you know? Yeah. So thank you. Please.
I found the guided meditation very helpful. I went back to an experience I had doing walking meditation years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I named it. I gave it a headline. And then the name became, I don't want to say like a mantra, but like a gate opener.
Yeah.
Every time I would say one thing after another,
yep,
the gate opens, and I realize, oh, I'm doing that thing all the time.
Yeah. That makes sense to me. And I mean, that's actually how my particular mind works as well. Not all minds have that thing as a gate opening, but it definitely is for mine, which is why I bring it as one of possible tools.
And so then in the wider sense, it's like, oh, well, if dropping in a wisdom statement isn't the gateway for your mind, then the encouragement is to find your gateway, because it doesn't matter what it is. But what's wonderful about that is you got to experience that directly, how it feels, the familiarity with it, and then that trust and confidence, oh, this is already moving through. Now the relationship becomes more conscious, and that's important. Yeah, so that's really great. So what else, other windows into your day of practice, or just into your messy life? Nothing happened. We were blank screens all day. Yeah, Sarah.
So I've been meditating regularly and involved with some for about 15 years. Whenever I'd go on retreats, I would just be like, wrestling with something or the other, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed just lately is that I'm not so much. I mean, I guess that's my aha moment. And I also struggle with sleepiness, so yeah, I did fall asleep a couple times today and kind of spaced out. But I also realized, like, there's just not that much coming up right now that's, like, that dramatic. I mean, I don't think coming up, you know, some health or run the family or whatever, but the same hole or the same angst or the same just complete mental latching on. And so for me, that's really notable, even though it's like not notable. It's easy to let that go by.
And that's what I was saying, you know, it's sometimes it's so simple, it's so subtle, we miss it. And that's actually a really important point you bring up, just as a whole nother area, that, again, in terms of meditation practices, we tend to, just as a habit, notice the cultivation and the arising more than the cessation. And so it's like Nibbana is the absence of all the things that, like, make life as a human being nightmarish, right? Or at least our relationship with it that makes things nightmarish. So it's like, oh, here's cessation. And it's so easily missed because we're completely conditioned and habituated. And in your case, you know, it's like the struggle and the complexity and, you know, maybe it's the drama of it, whatever it is. It's like, oh, this isn't familiar. So then we just glaze over and look for the next thing that is familiar. So that's a really, really important aha. And worth kind of, again, just being available to keep orienting to, oh, anything less? Anything ceased? And sometimes it's like, you know, full cessation, and they could be just like small or just this small. And other times just, oh, less. Or sometimes it'll be, oh, this situation used to produce blah, but now it's only producing blah. Technical terms. It's the end of the day. Yeah, so it's really important. Yeah. No, thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you for today. I've really enjoyed the format. And I come from a yoga tradition, so I like the body movement, I like the walking, but the Qigong, and I've done Qigong, but none of the things that you presented in there, really helpful.
Oh, good.
So I like that part. I also liked the guided meditation, and what was helpful to me, which may be obvious, is to realize that the insight didn't have to come just from meditation. My insight was seeing that I had gotten an insight in a different, actually, spiritual practice. But I got that today.
Looking yes.
Forward, that's what that was.
And, yes.
And it informed my life, and I changed my behavior.
Yeah.
And it worked.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing. So
yeah.
That was helpful.
And sometimes when we have, you know, periods of time like this where the responsibilities and the roles are settled out, then we have time to actually see, oh, growth happened. And then seeing it, recognizing it, again, you start to develop a relationship with it in a new way, even though it's already been informing you. Now it's recognized, you know, can pivot towards it with, you know, intention or finding your gateway, as somebody put it, or just like, oh, okay, so there was a cycle. What's next? That simple. You know, gratitude, you know, as a practice with it, or as just a way of being like, oh, grateful.
The tip of the iceberg, it reminded me, the other question I had was about, you had a lot of very good quotes, and I didn't bring pen and paper. Is this being recorded? Is it on the, it's not.
No, it's not being recorded, but, you know, if you want to jot down your favorite one, I got the sheet right here.
Okay.
And I, you know, I have new quotes since the Dharma talk I recorded at Spirit Rock, but
okay.
But feel free, come on up. Yeah. Glad you're here.
I just wanted to say, very important, in terms of insight. My insight at this moment is the joy and the recognition of youth. You came and began at 17.
Mm.
Right now we're seeing lots of 17-year-olds. And
right, stepping up.
Really stepping up.
Yeah.
Really seeing things that a lot of folks aren't seeing.
Mm.
And just that promise. And so, when I tell people I'm going to see Heather, one of the reasons is that for your youth, I mean, you still are a very young person. You know, it's this juxtaposition between wonderful wisdom and your youth.
Yeah.
And then to see this group and this collection, and they're all over, everywhere,
mm-hmm.
these young people
mm-hmm.
who are coming forth. And because we're all being pulled down in darkness sometimes. And so
always. Greed, hatred, delusion, you know. They don't have an end point.
I just saw this parallel.
Good. Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely the elder generation of the next generation compared to those 17-year-olds. But, you know, I feel it with what's happening in our Dharma organizations and, like, making this decision to join the Spirit Rock Teachers Council as if I have extra time to do something like that. But when I really looked in my heart, it was like, that's just going to be a hard transition for that organization, and I've been involved in it for over 20 years, and it's like I want to do my part, you know? So it's that kind of energy we need. We all bring it in different ways. Those of us that are raising the next generation of children, right? No. So any last anything before we do a little closing practice? Yes, please, last one. Aftermath.
Because a recent experience. I think I learned the root of a piece that's been with me all my life and has created difficulties. And in seeing that and accepting it and releasing it, I felt this just spaciousness
mm-hmm.
open up.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of being filled with joy and, you know, go dance in that space, I just kept looking at it and saying, I feel untethered. And enough time in the practice to go, oh, interesting. Well, I'll just sit with being untethered then, rather than trying to create a structure in there again.
That's big. You know, nurturing the capacity to rest. And it's not about how long or how intensely, but to rest in the feeling of untethered. You know? I'm remembering one of the people I work with ongoing who had a big, profound whatever this winter. And I remember him saying, yeah, and da 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 da, and then there was a party going on in my mind. It was a party. He's kind of a young person, you know. It was a party. I always think about like the joy on his face, and that, you know, because when things open and release, I mean, this is a whole piece I didn't get to in this day long that I do in retreats. It's like there's incredible bliss and joy and gratitude, and you're crying, and you know, that whole thing, and like how this. This possibility of resting in that without having to prolong it, without having to make it bigger or this or that, or it's that same capacity that lets us rest with like, okay, I feel untethered. And maybe there's a twinge of fear or a twinge of confusion or just a twinge of like nothing in particular, but just kind of like untethered. Oh. You know, and it's small moments many times, and then it's like, oh, okay. Because at some point, guess what? I mean, if we keep going with this, the prize is untethered. But it's not the untethered that we were taught it was going to be, or that we thought it was going to be, or any of this, right? So, yeah, that's a really important piece. And you just rest there when you can. And then when the swirl starts around it, then it's really making a choice, like what's needed in that point. Is it compassion? Is it grounding? You know, is it coming back to the breath? Is it getting some interpersonal support because that was really intense? Those choices. But then we have the support to keep coming back and resting in the center. That's great. It's a good place to close. And appreciate your sharing and your practice.